Hey there, fellow humans. Mark Labusk here for another episode of the Simply Practically Human podcast, I think 170-something. For those who have done some work with me, they will know of this person, not so much by name, but by video that they've seen. Kim Addis, who is the president and founder of Frame of Mind Coaching and the co-founder of the journal That Talks Back, and also the curator of a little video that I use, which I'm going to put a link in this episode too, where Kim talks about what's your story? And today she'll get into some amazing tools and tips, bloody practical things that you can use that are going to help you to stop getting yourself caught up in how your thoughts become your actions and getting ahead of that. So have a listen, take some notes, and have a look at that video link that we have in the podcast notes.
Life can get pretty complicated. In the Simply Practically Human podcast, Mark Labusk talks to incredible humans to see the way forward more clearly through the complexity in the world and in our heads. Let's get ready to thrive.
Hey, I'm delighted to be joined today by the president and founder of Frame of Mind Coaching and the co-founder of the journal That Talks Back, Kim Addis. Kim, thanks for joining me.
I'm so happy to be here. You have no idea. I'm thrilled. Thank you for inviting me onto your podcast.
Hey, I'm so glad to have you on. It's been such a long time since we actually caught up face to face, which all came about because I was gifted, I'm going to say gifted, a short 6-minute video that you've made that has become something that I share with thousands and thousands of people. But before we get into that, let's talk about first impressions. So this idea of when we first met, we get first impressions, we have thoughts and things. What was your first impression of Mark Labusk?
My first impression is smart, insightful, but also very strong and don't cross mark.
Wow. Don't cross mark. I like that. People be fearful of me. So for me, I only go with that first word you said because my first impression was on the video and it was like there was a real strength about it. But the thing that really stood out for me was there was this cheekiness about you and this ability to deliver a message, a very powerful message, but in a very, very, I'm going to say cheeky and somewhat humorous way. So, and even having yourself like at the middle of the message was something that not only did I pick up there, but I reckon I started to use myself. So that was it. And then when we met face to face that time, which was so good, I got to come around to your house and have dinner with the family. And that was an absolute highlight. So I wanted to say thank you for that invitation many years ago.
Of course. My home is where you really get to know about me. So always an open invitation.
I loved it. Hey, we're going to talk today about, I'm going to call it What's Your Story? This whole idea of the work you do is amazing because you're able to help people to get underneath understanding that their thoughts precede all of their actions. But talk a little bit before we get there around just Frame of Mind Coaching and this thing in particular, the journal That Talks Back. I'd like to just hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing leads to the other. So I'll just give you a little bit of both. So I've been coaching leaders, executives, entrepreneurs, like the highly driven population for the past 18 years. But when I first started coaching wasn't as popular as it is now. I think that I was kind of like on the leading edge of coaching and some of the thought around coaching. But at the time, there's a heavy emphasis on coaching for the purpose of helping people reach their goals through the process of accountability. And for me, that just stank. Like it didn't feel good to me. I thought people know what they're supposed to be doing. Why do they need someone else to hold them accountable? I thought there's got to be a better way. What's stopping them from reaching their goals? It has to do with the way they think, the way they feel, the way they see themselves, how confident they are. But it has to do with what's really going on beneath the surface. And so that's when I decided to start Frame of Mind Coaching. And I thought if I could just get inside people's heads and understand what they believe to be true, what's important to them, and what's getting in the way of their performance, and move that crap out of the way, then I would be able to really help them soar. And so at the very, very beginning, I decided that I would ask my clients to journal in a private and secure online journal. And so every week they would get a journaling question or a prompt. They would start journaling. And every time they journaled, their coach would read and respond to their journals. So now I have a team of coaches. In the early days, it was just me. But what happened is that I would be able to see how a person thinks and really get to the source or the heart of their patterns, the way that they view the world, what they believe to be true, how they get triggered, how they react and respond to different events and experiences. And that would reveal to me how they operate and how they're wired and how sometimes, and this applies to all of us, their thinking really contradicted or clashed with their desires and goals. And in any case, we've developed that process and that way of coaching for many, many years. And it's extremely impactful. It's super deep. And it moves someone a very far distance in a short period of time.
That whole idea of accountability and holding people to account as their coach, in some respects to me, it feels like it's a little bit superficial and a bit flaky. It sounds like you've been able to get into what I'm going to say this is hard work. Like, this is the harder work, isn't it? The easier work is, let's have a sheet of six things I want to make you accountable, hold you accountable to for the next month, and then we'll tick those off almost transactionally, whereas you're getting into what's going on inside people's minds. And I guess to the topic of today, which is their story.
Well, let me kind of go back because you asked me another question, but you know, I just want to address that. When you focus on accountability, you're focused on what a person is doing,
yep,
the actions they take or the actions they don't take. But every action is preceded with a thought, right? We think first, then we act. Even if our thinking is sometimes unconscious or subconscious. And so if you really want someone to create massive change, you have to do what comes before the doing, which, yep, is addressing the thoughts. But what I wanted to tell you was that recently we started hearing from our clients. So a lot of our clients were struggling with their young adult children. They were saying things like, hey, my daughter has severe anxiety. She's, you know, in university and she's freezing during exams, or my son is on the couch playing video games all day long, or my daughter wants to take a gap year and she wants to quit her job. I never took a gap year. Or, you know, my son has no clue what he wants to do with his career. He has so much potential, but he's lost. Can you help? And then I also started to hear from our corporate clients who are saying things like, hey, we're hiring all these young professionals, but there's this weird gap and we don't understand because suddenly they're just quitting and we don't even see it coming. You know, we have a retention problem. And things like, I remember one client told me, hey, we're sitting in a meeting. Everything was going well. My young professional employee got up to go to the bathroom and never returned. And so we saw this trend in this very specific age range where young people were struggling and didn't know how to have a conversation with the appropriate people, right? Mm. They didn't know how to access help. So that's why we launched the Journal That Talks Back. It is unlimited, accessible, affordable coaching for young professional using the journaling platform, using the journaling methodology that we created at Frame of Mind Coaching.
This is such a space too, because, you know, the great resignation is going on, but I think people have been resigning for decades. It's been highlighted a bit more with COVID, but what you were talking about then, I want to just throw this one at you. It brings to mind for me what I call the great realization, is that human beings have really started to think about, what is this life of mine? And I think they're starting to delve into what you're talking about now is almost getting past those superficial the thoughts that they're trying to have to make sure they fit in, to now the thoughts that are really going on for them that are like, I've got a life and my life has been in some respects determined for me by my work. I can resign, but there's something going on before resignation, which is realization. What are your thoughts about that concept of the great realization coming before the great resignation?
I loved it. I actually wrote down those words because, you know, you take my video, I might steal a word of yours. So I love the concept of the great realization, but I don't actually think realization is taking place, to be completely honest.
Right.
I think what's happening is a feeling of overwhelm, a feeling of misunderstanding or being felt misunderstood, a feeling of being trapped, a feeling of having no control. And those feelings are so intensified that a person doesn't know what else to do. They don't have the skills, they don't have the tools to address that feeling or the problem inside organizations. So they bolt, they just leave.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's a great realization. I think there's an intense emotion.
Nice.
That's what precedes resignation.
I'm going to steal that word because that can go in front of the great realization. We're sharing concepts and ideas and things here. Hey, I want to go back now, though, to you, because I always love to delve a little bit into the backstory. What got you to where you are today? And we can go back as far as you want, where you grew up, and was there a time that you got into this stuff?
I've always been interested in helping people, and I often refer to one particular experience in my life when I was in high school. And, you know, I grew up in Montreal, and high school is grade 7 in Montreal.
Yep.
And, you know, I was young, I was naive, I was very, very sheltered as a kid. So it was my first year of high school, and it was lunchtime. I was walking around, we call it the circle, the hallways, really, at lunchtime. And there was this girl who passed by me, and she was very tall, very thin. She was older than me. She had very, very thin, kind of scraggly hair. She had a broken tooth, and she had a cigarette in her hand. And I had never been exposed to anything like that. And so I looked at her because, you know, when you see something interesting, you kind of just take a good look. Well, she wasn't happy that I looked at her. She was very unhappy. And she said, "What are you looking at?" And the next thing I know, she pinned me against the wall and wanted to beat me up for looking at her. And I wasn't a fighter. I wasn't in there to battle her. I was just kind of interested, fascinated by what I was seeing. And so I very, very quickly kind of said, "Hey, you know, I didn't mean anything by it. I'm really sorry." And either a crowd came around, it was like really wild, I was scared, and a teacher finally came in and broke up the fight that never happened. But I had dreams about her, like the same dream over and over and over again over the course of years. And the dream was that we were on a roller coaster together, and I was having a conversation with her about how she didn't have to be that way, how she could reform, how she could change her life, how she didn't have to, you know, choose the path that she was choosing, that she had lots of options available to her. Now, remember, I was like 12 at this point, but that's my personality. That's the foundation of who I am. Rather than having a dream about getting beaten up or being tormented, my dream was about helping her come to a better place. And so that's where it started.
So just on that, in respect to the concept of helpfulness, which I think is a very human thing, and I think there should be more of it, was there anything else for you along the way? Was there anyone that was really role modeling that helpfulness that you were seeing as a younger human being that was like, this feels like the right thing to do or the right way to be?
Well, I think my parents were always like that. They were always helping others around them, you know, no matter what it was. You know, my mom, who worked at a bank and came from a very different time and place. She was at that point an assistant manager or something at a bank. She had a chat with her employees, letting them know that smoking is very bad and that they really shouldn't do that. And I don't know if that's helping, but this idea of like stepping in to help someone have a better life.
Yep.
Somehow my father would lend money to people. Like there was always that kind of aspect in the house of how can we help other people live a better life? What can we do for that? Yeah.
I think there should be more of that. I think at times, and I understand why people look out for themselves first, but those human beings that just have that ability to step in to help people have something that's better for them, maybe it's about themselves, but that can be hard too, because a lot of people can't see that, can they? Because let's get into the story stuff now, they're caught in a whole lot of stories.
Exactly.
And that video of yours around, you know, what's your story, and, you know, the stories that we tell ourselves when we walk into rooms, like I hear it all the time, Kim. When people have watched the video, I say, what was your story when you got the email to come to this 2-day training program with me? Now, very rarely is the story like, I was delighted, I signed up for it, I couldn't wait to be there. It's mainly, I'll have 400 emails, I'll be something at work, there'll be something going on that goes wrong. What's going on with human beings to spend so much time in what I call their bad news filing cabinet or their bad stories versus the better stories?
You know, those bad news stories are just so captivating. I was on a podcast earlier and the question was around resilience. Okay, so what makes people resilient? So what makes people resilient is when, sure, they get back up after they have some kind of adversity and they get back up faster, stronger, and they leverage the adversity. But people who are resilient also have this determined focus on what they want. They're focused. They don't get so distracted by the bad news stories, as you call them, right? And so it's easy to get distracted, just like it's easy to have a plan that you want to lose weight, but then it's somebody's birthday and there's cake. And then so you eat the cake because it's a distraction and it's right in front of you and everybody else is eating cake. So you're going to eat cake too. And so bad news distraction is very similar to the cake. It takes your attention and it captivates you and it's so alive. It's so juicy. And so it's hard to stay on your path.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm relating to the story that there's a box of ice creams in the fridge that distracts me every second night, even though like you said, you want to lose weight.
Only every second night? What about the other night?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to be a bit generous to myself here, but it could be every other night. So checking yourself at the door, they're interesting words. And how'd you come up with that concept and why is it such an important one for human beings to check themselves at every door they walk through?
Well, here's the thing. I think that people have a desire for a certain experience in life. They have a desire for certain relationships. They have a desire to reach certain goals or to reach certain outcomes. And when we check ourselves at the door, in a big way, we remind ourselves what that experience is that we're looking for or that desire is that we want. Because very often, right, we're talking about distraction. We walk into a door, literally or figuratively, and we see something and we immediately get distracted and we forget what it is that we really, really want. When we check ourselves at the door, it's like a moment to ourselves where we say, what is it that I want to get out of this experience? Oh, yes. So if that's what I want to get out of it, then this view of what I'm seeing or this attitude or this reaction is not aligned with the thing that I want. So it's a moment of correction. Of self-correction.
I love that.
It's a moment of, hold on a second, I was about to get distracted. Let me get back on track, back in my lane.
I refer to that as the two A's, awareness and adjustment. That moment in time where you go like, I've had a thought, and that thought, I always think about this, is it helpful or is it harmful for either me or for others? And if it's harmful, you need to adjust in that moment. And that's bloody hard to do because, you know, let's think about the real world of work now. Maybe we could start to get some ideas on how to combat this from the expert, but people who go to back-to-back-to-back-to-back meetings, and they might be on virtual these days because there's so much virtual stuff going on, or they could be face-to-face. But, you know, your meeting that runs over 3 minutes. It's 3 minutes over, it's time. You're carrying a whole lot of baggage out of that one, and then you walk into the next one or you get onto the next Zoom call. What are your tips for people around how do they in that moment check themselves at the door? Like, what are the things that are going to help them to go from one experience to the next without carrying a whole lot of baggage?
I mean, let's back up a minute because I feel the beliefs we have will determine how things play out for us.
Yep.
Okay. So you're already describing a scenario where people have back-to-back meetings with absolutely no break in between. So why do we even do that? Like, why? Because we have a belief that we have to do that. We have a belief that if we don't do that, we're losing time or we're, you know, going to disappoint someone or we're going to something. And what I want to do for starters is to say, hey, is that a good plan for you? Maybe that's not a good plan. Maybe you need 15 minutes in between. Maybe you need a bathroom break. Maybe you need to grab a glass of water or a snack. Maybe you need to get some fresh air. So if I take care of myself, my physical, my emotional, my mental self, then I'm more prepared to go into the next meeting. And so what I want to do is start with that. Are we setting things up so that we're going in feeling good and healthy? If we're going in frazzled, if we're going in tired, if we're going in overwhelmed with the last meeting, then we're not giving our best and showing up as our best. Do we need to have it that way? Is it a must? Or is there a belief that keeps us trapped in that model of operating? So I want to start there.
Yeah. So the belief that busyness is a badge of honor, that the busy fool wins, and that if I'm not in back-to-back meetings, that maybe I'm not relevant anymore. Maybe people are starting to wonder, if Kim isn't going to every meeting, maybe Kim's starting to get a thought in her mind that what am I going to miss if I'm not there?
Exactly.
So I guess that's what I'm hearing from you is getting above the noise of the doing and sitting there and going, do we really believe we're getting the best out of our people, our organization, if we run back-to-back meetings? Now, how do you break that cycle, though? Because that's got worse during COVID. Like, all of a sudden, diaries are just, your diary is someone else's time now. So what can organizations do to break that cycle of the belief that busyness is a badge of honor?
Honestly, I think that we need to tune in and ask, what do you need in order to feel healthy? What do you need in order to feel well prepared for these meetings? What do you need? Do you need 5 minutes of play? Do you need food? What do you need here?
Yep.
And giving permission, and I think this part is important, giving permission for individuals to take care of their needs without any judgment, without any recrimination, without any punishment. When I run a meeting, and I know you have meetings too, like where you have lots of people in the room, I don't want them to wait for a break to go to the bathroom. If you need to go to the bathroom, get up and go. You are responsible for your ability to pay attention. And if your body says, I need to go to the bathroom, and that's stopping you from paying attention, you need to get up and go. And I don't want you to ask me for permission for that. And I'm using a small example, but the truth is, if companies gave permission to their staff to take care of themselves and created that as a cultural norm, that would go a long, long way.
You know, I love the example you use because I use that in the room when I'm with my clients. I'll say, particularly one venue I use, I say the bathrooms are a long way away from here. So do not hang on till the break, or do not, because you got a fair way to go. And it's not school. This isn't school here. You don't have to put your hand up. You just get up and away you go. So let's then talk quickly about permission and accountability then. I love to talk to people about giving people permission rather than making them accountable or giving them the accountability. In your mind there, I said I'd throw just questions at randomly at you. Here's one. Permission and accountability. What's the difference?
Well, let's talk about accountability in the traditional sense. So do I want to work with people who are accountable? Yes. I don't want to work with people who are accountable to me. I don't want to hold them accountable. I just want them to show up in an accountable manner. You see the difference there?
Yep.
Like, I don't want my job to make sure you do your job. I don't want that. I want my job to make sure I do my job. And I want your job to make sure you do your job. So accountability in a more modern sense is I want you to be accountable for yourself.
Yes.
And I want to trust you to do that. That's it. And I give you permission to do whatever you need to do so that you can be accountable.
I love that. That's a beautiful way to put it. Hey, you said something before, which I really, really love. You ask questions like, what are you doing? Rather than making that first impression and that assumption that someone's doing something that's not right. So why do we not ask that very, very simple question as much as we should as human beings? Why do we come into a room and assume that we're seeing something that is not how it should be before we get curious? I got a friend who talks about, let's get curious before we get furious.
I love that. That's good.
Why do we do that? Why do we not ask that simple question that you asked Lewis that time about when he was laying on the couch? Why?
Why don't we ask the question? Because I think that we think we know.
Yeah.
I think that we get all this stimulus, we get all this data through all of our senses, through our sight, through our sound, through our nose, through all of our senses. We're getting all of this stimulus and we interpret it very, very quickly. And we create an assessment. We know what's going on. And so we don't need to ask because we already know. We see it with our own eyes. God damn it. We already see. So why would... You know, you don't have to tell me what's going on. I see what's going on. And so we believe, again, the word is believe, we believe we know.
Yep.
That's where you get into trouble.
Yep. Where does the concept of rightness come into it then? I'm not sure if it's a belief, maybe it is, that we need to be right. So we see something and we may or may not be right, but there's this thing that I need to be right, because what does being right mean to a human being?
Well, it means that they have value. It means that they're worthwhile, right? But we have a concept at Frame of Mind Coaching, and it goes like this. You can be right or you can be happy. Choose one. You can't have both, right? And so very often people are choosing right over being happy. And when they're right, what do? In that moment, they say, aha, you're wrong. But does that lead to the ultimate goal? So if I call you wrong, if I catch you doing something wrong and I call you out, that whole calling people out thing drives me nuts. But if I call you out, what does that do for our relationship? Does it create a bond? Does it make us come closer together? What does it do for us? Does nothing. Doesn't lead to the ultimate goal, which is being on the same page, being aligned and building that relationship. It does nothing for us.
So just on that, let's get into some tools and tips. And let's start with rightness, because I see the game of rightness played out every day. Like, I'm right. No, you're wrong. No, I'm right. And all of a sudden we get into a pissing contest, and then no one wins that, because I love what you said before. I think it starts to impact on the quality of the relationships, and it really starts to impact on the ability to do really good work between human beings who start to, you used the word before, start to build trust. So what would be one thing you'd say to get out of this bloody vicious cycle of rightness and wrongness that you would suggest to anyone listening now that finds himself in that situation?
I think one of the most valuable questions you could ask yourself daily, multiple times a day, is what do I really, really want right here, right now, out of this person, out of this situation? What do I really, really want right now? And think about what you ultimately want. In other words, saying, oh, I want them to say they're wrong, isn't what you really want. That's just what you want in the moment. But why do you want them to say that they're wrong? What's deeper than that?
Yeah.
So what do you really, really want? And I'll give you a very, very quick, easy example. I was coaching a guy one day, and he owned an accounting firm. And early on in our coaching process, I said, hey, like, tell me, what are your priorities? What is the most important thing for you? He said, hands down, over and above everything, the most important thing in my world is my relationship with my wife. It's more important than my work. It's more important than my friendships. It's more important even than the relationships I have with my kids. It's very important. We're on the same page. We're aligned. We spend quality time together. That relationship with my wife is crucial. A few weeks later, you know, our client's journal, in their journal, he wrote a journal. He said, I just got into a massive fight with my wife. And the short story is they didn't agree on something related to his son.
Yep.
So his son wanted to do something. He said no. His wife said yes. And he was so upset with the fact that she overruled him that he decided to sleep in the other room. So does sleeping in the other room align with his number one priority?
Yeah, gotcha. No.
Not at all. So he needed to be right. And in this moment, he was probably right. It probably wasn't a great idea to say yes when his son wanted to go to an all-night party, right? Probably not a great idea, but that's not the point.
Yep.
The point is he sacrificed, and we're often doing that. We're sacrificing the things that are most important to us, the things that we really, really want in order to be happy.
Makes a lot of sense. I'm sure people are listening going, yep, I've been there. I've slept in that other room. I know exactly what Kim's talking about. Just on that, let's talk a bit then about not the workplace, but family, because the things that you teach, what I love about your work, it's, and that's why I love that, again, the video, and I'm going to put a link in the episode, is that example that you use, without spoiling it too much, is just such a perfect, popular, and example that happens very frequently. Advice for people who say, there's a work version of me, and then there's a home version of me, and then there's all these other things, that these things that you teach and what you uncover for people, it's about life, isn't it? So
it's totally about life.
How do you help people to get to the point where they go, oh no, now I'm corporate Mark, and now I'm family Mark, and now I'm something else. How can you help people bust through that?
There's a thread, okay, for every person. There's a thread. And that thread is the thread of your beliefs.
Yep.
So the way you think in one area of your life will profoundly impact the way you think in another area of your life. And I have seen this a million times over, that the way a person thinks about parenting will profoundly impact the way they think about leadership. They are so connected. Your experiences as a child with your own parents will impact the way you show up as a leader at work. You know, do you trust people? Do you give people responsibility, or do you feel like you do everything better and it's easier to just get it done on your own? Right? Like, how do you operate? How do you show up? How do you, and I hate the word discipline, but how do you raise your kids?
Yeah.
Are you punishing them? What do you expect from them? How do you react when your kids lie to you? All of those things tell us about how you process experiences, how you react to things, what you believe to be true. And those beliefs show up in the workplace. I can guarantee you that for sure.
It's so good to hear that because I think there's a, I don't know what the movement is, but this idea that we're different. I use a framework put together by a couple of professors from Boston, Robert Keegan and Lisa Leahy, called Immunity to Change. And when people go through that, they always relate, in the end, they always relate back to childhood experiences or something happened. You know, they got held up against the wall in a fight by, you know, when they were 12 years old. Any of those sorts of things have an impact. So listeners, please take heed of this, that when you walk through that door or get on that Zoom call today, don't try and turn up as someone very differently, because it'll absolutely go ass over head.
But also, you cannot escape yourself.
I love it.
You can't escape yourself.
Right.
So you can't tuck part of yourself away. It doesn't work. It seeps out.
So you know what, just on that around identity and whatnot, why do people try and tuck parts of themselves away?
Because they think it's safer.
Yep.
That's why.
Mm. And we love to be safe. We don't want to play in the dangerous space. Whenever you say things like, and I want you to write these words down, which you say at the very end of that video, the three words which are what? What are those famous three words?
Assume positive intent. Yes. Write that down.
So I want us to finish on this one, because as human beings who are always looking for danger, potentially, what's going to be bad for me? What's that person going to do to me? Am I going to get fired? Is my car going to start today? Did I turn the iron off when I left for work? How hard is it for human beings to assume positive intent?
It seems to be a bit challenging.
Yeah.
It's a skill. It's a muscle. We need to learn and practice, and we need to develop that. Because when we assume positive intent, so many interesting things happen. Communication changes. Things become easier. You achieve your goals with greater ease. I mean, it's actually such a powerful concept. And it's so simple. And start with this. Assume everybody wants to succeed.
Yep.
Assume everybody wants to have a positive impact. And assume everybody wants to be thought of in a positive manner.
And stop walking into the room. As I say to people when they come into the room, what if I walked in, and what if you walked in when you're working with clients and there was multiple clients in the room, and you went, and I looked at Kim and I went, Kim's the one who's come today to try and derail my program and piss me off and disrupt other people. Just thinking for a moment about what happens to the way that you will interact with that person versus I walk in and I go, well, isn't it great to have Kim here? She's smiling. She's been connecting with other people and having conversations. We do get this sense, well, I get this sense that some people think that there are people turning up to work every day to derail them and piss them off and destroy them. So the advice that I'm hearing is from you is to take that story and clean it up, as you say, clean up your story.
I'm going to throw one more thing at you.
Please.
That we've never discussed.
Good.
So there is the concept of assuming positive intent. But there's another concept that's called assigning positive intent.
Oh, lovely.
What is the difference between assuming positive intent and assigning positive intent? Assigning positive intent is useful when you see someone doing something that is questionably positive.
Yep.
See them doing something like creating a fuss. Let's say you're in a meeting and someone stands up and starts, you know, saying, I don't agree. Right? And they're creating a whole big fuss in the room. And when we assign positive intent, we literally out loud assign a positive reason for their behavior. This must mean a lot to you.
Yep.
You must be very passionate about this. Right? So now the person isn't acting from a bad place. They're acting from a good place. And when they are heard and understood and feel validated in their intention, they calm down.
When people are heard, I like that too. The idea that I think part of it is that people don't feel heard. Even though they speak, they don't feel heard. So all of a sudden they double down. They double down on the resistance, and then it gets into more of a shit fight. And then I think historical things come into it. And then we start to play the person and not the issue.
Exactly. But if you feel like the people in the room are seeing you as a person who matters, who cares, who's coming from a good place, who has good intention, who has good intent, now you don't have to fight so hard.
Yeah. What I love about this, again, is it's just so bloody practical. And people will listen to this and go, that happened to me yesterday. Or what's going to happen is today it will come up. And like, assign positive intent, people. Assume positive intent, but assign positive intent as well. I forgot to ask you very quickly, simple and practical, complex and complicated. I have a view that we overcomplicate stuff, that we try and make it really complex and complicated because at times it might make me look smarter or whatever, when some of the answers are pretty simple, notwithstanding we're a complex beast. What are your thoughts around whether or not humans try and overcomplicate or turn things into complexity when they can be fixed up simply, I'm going to say, with a thing like asking someone a question like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I do think that there are a lot of solutions for human interaction that can be rather simple.
Yep.
I think that people have a lot of resistance. And the resistance is years and years and years of built up. Again, I want to go back to the word beliefs.
Yep.
That contradict a person's desires and goals. They have habits of belief that make simplicity difficult or inaccessible. And so, yes, simplicity is always a better solution. But even when you provide simplicity, what we see is a great deal of resistance. And it's because people are holding on for dear life to their view of the world.
Yep.
Because if they let go, they're afraid something terrible might happen.
Gotcha.
Let's say a person has a bad experience dating.
Yep.
Right? And so now they form the belief, oh, all women are out for my money, just as an example. Letting go of that means letting someone in and being subject to that same pain again. It's easier to be resistant.
I love it. Another great example. Hey, so you work with people all around the world, is that right?
All around the world, everywhere around the world, yes.
Okay, so how do the listeners get in touch with you?
So two ways. Well, you can reach out to me directly, kim@frameofmindcoaching.com. That's way number one. But if you're interested in taking a look at the Journal That Talks Back, go take a look. It's thejournalthattalksback.com. And of course, it's frameofmindcoaching.com.
I love it. Hey, it's been too long since we've caught up last. And I hope it's not going to be this long again. And I hope they open up. Well, we're opening up again. But it's funny with travel because I'm a bit of a homebody these days. I like hanging around my country. But hopefully I'll get back over there and we'll get to go and have some lunch again and catch up. But thanks for coming on. And I've really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you so much. It was awesome talking to you again.
Hey, I'm trying to remember when I was invited to Kim's place over in Toronto, went round for dinner and I got to meet the family and just had an absolute hoot of a night. And Kim talked about helpfulness today. She talked about beliefs today. She talked about what we need to do to overcome, I guess, the stories that we would carry about different things. She talked about assigning positive intent as well as assuming positive intent. And all of those things that she talked about were what I experienced when I got to spend a bit of time with Kim and the family many, many years ago. Some of the things that came up today, just to be able to keep me on track around thinking about how do you deal with your stories? How do you deal with that thought that comes into your mind? So thinking and acting, what do we do before that? What are our beliefs? What are our habits? What are some of the things that have happened to us in the past that create this? Why are we getting caught up in rightness and wrongness? Why do we not assume positive intent? Why do I not assume positive intent? Why do you not assume positive intent when you walk into that room? What's creating all that? And then where do all of your thoughts come into that? So many things to think about. We get distracted. What is one area of your life, as Kim said, that you really want to get better? I love this idea of the journal that talks back. I know I've had a look at some of the tools that Kim has through her business and her business partners, and they are phenomenal. So check those out as well. Check out the little 6-minute video. Do yourself a favor and have a watch of that. Find 6 minutes to have a watch of that video. Watch it the whole way through because It's powerful all the way through, but the last three words are very, very powerful indeed. Hey, if you love this one, as I did, please rate it 5 stars and leave us a little comment on what you loved about it. And if you liked it, share it with your friends. Share it with some of your friends who perhaps at the moment are a bit too much caught up in their stories and caught up in the story that I have to be someone different every time I turn up into a different environment. But until next time, keep it simple, keep it practical, and keep it human. Bye for now.